welcome back to MLS Six Pack. Jessica Charm and Jason Longshore, and we're finally back talking. If you're wondering where last week's episode was, I was giving Jason Longshore the cold shoulder. No, I'm just kidding. We are fine. The Atlanta United Charlotte Derby Day did not go the way that the For the Crown fans were hoping, Atlanta United picking up the 1-0 win. But we're doing okay, aren't we, Jason? We're back on talking terms.
Hey, I'm good. I've been good. It was a good trip to Charlotte. Jay Fortune, who has just been such a cool story for us on the SDH network and covering him, he gets his first MLS goal. It's a great goal. A really good result for Atlanta United. And, you know, the international break honestly came at a bad time for Atlanta. Other games happened. We'll talk about that here in a second. But you get a little bit of momentum and then you have a break. So now Atlanta's got to kind of chill out, get that momentum going again, and things get really hectic the rest of the way in MLS starting this upcoming week where we have a full slate of midweek matches.
I think it's ironic because both teams will feel the same way about that international break. For Charlotte, they want to get that game out of their system. They wanted to be able to bounce back. Instead, they had to wait all the way to this weekend where they'll head to Canada. So we're going to get into games that are tickling our fancy later on, but let's begin with our first part of the six pack, and it goes in to some of those games you mentioned. And Caleb Porter is not making too many friends right now with the people over at Major League Soccer, and he has been hit with a one-game suspension and a $20,000 fine for talking about the officiating in New England Revolution's game as a joke show and calling one referee in particular a coward. So Jason, get into what led to these press conference comments and your thoughts on the process of Caleb Porter being so vocal when you know in this league that you're going to get punished for it.
Yeah, I think sometimes you know you're going to get a fine and it's worth it to you to make your point. The suspension is maybe a little bit more than Caleb Porter went into that with in mind, but Tim Ford is one of the referees in this league that I hate to say this, but when this incident started and you started to hear about what was going on in this game, you know, late in it, and then you hear the comments afterwards, it's a situation where when I looked back to see who the referee was, I was not surprised. And look, that plays into Caleb Porter's comments here because coaches know referees that maybe they worry about a little bit. Coaches have histories with referees as well. Like
I think broadcasters know it as well. Let's be honest. When we see referee placements, there's a circle of certain personality types, Jason, that you know you're going to have more talking about the laws of the game than maybe you would like to.
Tim Ford's on that list. And in this situation, so all that being said, you go into the game and you're kind of like, and then a call goes against you. The call itself, handball is a very difficult call these days. And I really, really want IFAB at the international level to get this law clarified better. I feel like they're going back and forth at times in the way that they're defining it and in the way that they're wanting referees to implement it. And they're confusing everybody, including the referees. So that is part of this issue. In this call with Kyle Hebert and his right arm, and is it in a justifiable position? Is it in a natural position? All the different terminology things that we say. It's a judgment call. And I don't think it is horribly egregious that it is not given. Could it have been given? Absolutely. Could it have not been given? Obviously, yeah. I think Caleb Porter being frustrated with Tim Ford is an understandable situation here. But here's the deal. Like, you can't call a referee a coward. There is that line, and that's an important element part of this. You can say some things. I go back to late last season and Atlanta United's match in Philadelphia where there were a whole bunch of issues in that game. And Alex Chilowitz, that was the last game he ever refereed in Major League Soccer, by the way. He didn't referee the rest of the season, and then he went to the lower divisions in England after that, which is a crazy
career. I've seen him in Reading. He's literally refereed Reading FC games, and anybody knows how Reading are doing in terms of league tells you how low he's dropped.
It's crazy. He I guess, left on his own. There wasn't ever an announcement that Pro wasn't going to bring him back, but that was the last game he did. Gonzalo Pineda shredded him after the game, but did not say something like this, coward, joke show, clown show, those kinds of things. That made it a little more personal. So I don't know how you feel about it. Like, it's a tricky situation in terms of fining and suspending a coach for what they say about a referee afterwards. But there is some sort of a line that you can't quite cross.
And Vanni Sartini, there was Tim Ford involved in that scenario as well, as you mentioned, where the comments were a little inappropriate. I think there's one thing to say you disagree. There's another thing to cross the line and start to bring in the personality, people make mistakes. It's okay to say that, but you don't want to compare them to clowns. That's when maybe you cross a line with the respectability of the league, and you know, the league is setting a standard here, I guess, with Caleb Porter, with the significance of the fine and the ban. And hopefully this is kind of like that benchmark of coaches understanding what they can say and when they can say it. But you're so right about the handball. We just need to know. It's just so inconsistent. And the judgment call, it just has to be clearer across the board. So what is a handball is known constantly for all referees, for all coaches, for all players. Because what's so funny is most players couldn't tell you the offside rule, the handball rule now.
Some of them can't tell you the offside rule either.
I think judging, I was projecting.
Yeah, judging from some of the players and how they try to run that line, yeah, they couldn't tell you at all. It's a funny situation with this, with Caleb Porter being suspended a game, with being fined a fairly large amount. My biggest thing before we move on is I do want to see referees and at whatever level, assigners, spokespeople, when we're talking about pro, all of that, I want to see a greater level of accountability rather than constant backing up of the referee that they never made a mistake and there was no mistake and everything was perfect. They make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. Players make mistakes. It's part of the game. We're talking about human beings, but we do want it to get better. We want fewer mistakes. And I think when we can have real conversations about it, maybe then you don't get these kinds of comments after games where it feels like more of an attack. Caleb Porter crossed the line in terms of the personal attack, but his frustration with the referee, it is understandable because of the history. It's also understandable because it was a very contentious call, and it was a very important call in the match that could have given New England 3 points and could have gotten them really close into this playoff race that is going to go down to the wire. Speaking of coaches being frustrated with league rules or referees or people in charge, Wilfred Nancy had a 7-minute I don't know what word I want to use here. A diatribe is what came to mind. That might not be the right term. A 7-minute dissertation, let's go with that, about the rules in MLS that prevented Columbus from having a second goalkeeper on the game day roster because they were out of short-term call-ups for their Columbus Crew 2 goalkeepers. And they went into a match with one goalkeeper. And it doesn't happen all the time, but in this one, they lose their goalkeeper in the first half, and they have to put Sean Zawadzki, who had probably played every position on the field up to that point at some stage in his Columbus career, he has to go in goal. They lose 4-0 to Seattle, and Wilfred Nancy was not happy about it afterwards. What are your thoughts, Jess?
Well, firstly, wow. I mean, it was a perfect storm, right? I mean, you mentioned it. What are the chances of having your goalkeeper sent off the game that you don't have a goalkeeper on the bench? It's pretty much unheard of. But then you look at when he was sent off, 45+2. So Zawadzki had to play an entire half plus stoppage time in goal. That takes some giant cojones. So, all praise to Zawadzki for stepping up. Unfortunately, he probably realized how difficult it was to be a goalkeeper, and all of a sudden the GK Union and Columbus Crew getting absolutely tapped on the back for their hard work and the difficulty of the position. I understand Wilfried Nancy's frustration, right? Because it just seems so cruel to be able to see a team set up in a position where every team in the world needs a backup goalkeeper. That's just how you have it. I mean, some teams these days have two on the bench. You know, they use a sub position because they're like, we don't have enough field players, let's throw a goalkeeper in. Mm-hmm. Playing in the international break is already difficult enough. You know, we talk about how certain teams get dealt the hard hand, particularly if they have players that have been called up. I know Columbus Crew are missing several players due to the call-ups, including Cucho, who didn't even play for Colombia, was, you know, in and around, but didn't get an opportunity to play. I think that this one, there's got to be a solution. Rules are rules. And it's, you know, people say, well, a rule's a rule until it hurts you. And Wilfried Nancy probably wasn't complaining when other teams didn't have short-term call-ups. But there's got to be an ear of, I don't know how you do it, Jason, but surely there's a loophole with the goalkeeper situation to always make sure you have a goalkeeper on the bench.
Yeah, I agree. I think the goalkeeper spot has to be treated a little differently. You see it in the NHL, for example, where you have a different set of parameters when you talk about an emergency goaltender there. You have to be able to do something to cover that because it's a different kind of position. If you're shorthanded up top, you can play a midfielder as a forward and it's not as disruptive. So
versatility is one thing for a player, right? You expect a fullback to be able to slot into the midfield. You expect even a defender, you know, there's defenders that can sit and play a forward and be a target forward.
Yep.
But nobody can be, I don't care how people think it's easy. You know, everyone thinks they can be a goalkeeper until they're wearing the gloves and having balls whacked at them. And I think you saw that in the game, you know, it's just not a position that you can jump in at this level. You're not playing five aside, you know?
Right. No, there's got to be something different there. But this is a really complicated situation with these call-up rules. And I've seen a lot of people just absolutely butcher this conversation as of late. One thing, I think Columbus has to be more intelligent here and handle how they handle their short-term call-ups and plan better. They knew the rule. They knew the schedule. They knew what games they had. Yes, they've had more games than a lot of people, and they have had injuries at the goalkeeper position that have made this difficult, 100%. But you knew what was coming with this game. You knew what the potential was with guys being called up. You needed to go sign someone to a Columbus Crew 2 contract, and not one of your academy kids that, and Wilfried Nancy talked about that. You don't want to sign someone to a pro deal too early, and I'm with him on that. I'm absolutely with him in terms of the development side. But there are goalkeepers out there that if you needed to have an emergency goalkeeper and basically make your own situation here, I'm sure you could have found one in the greater Columbus area who would have signed a very low deal with Columbus Crew 2 to then be able to be called up to do this. That would have been possible. So they should have handled it better. That's on Columbus. On the MLS side of it, they need to have, as you said, a caveat in the rules about call-ups for goalkeepers because that should be treated differently. But also, look, MLSPA needs to come to the table on this because when you get into these call-up situations, and we've talked about it with the Open Cup this season as well, that is all part of the collective bargaining agreement. And the MLSPA is protecting its current members by limiting the amount of game time that non-members, which MLS Next Pro players are, they're limited in how much time they can get at the first team level. I think there is one easy fix to this, and the MLSPA and MLS Next Pro players should be part of the same organization. MLSPA should include MLS Next Pro professional players as part of the Players Association. Then you get away from it. They increase their membership. They have more voices, but also you get away from, well, I'm going to protect this guy and I'm not going to protect this guy. That needs to take place, or they need to extend the number of call-ups that can happen for players, because four call-ups, two games at the first team level, unlimited games in friendlies, other competitions, Leagues Cups included in the other competitions, it's not enough in the way that the calendar currently is. So that's got to get fixed either by bringing the MLS Next Pro professionals into the MLSPA or extending the call-up situation. Goalkeepers should absolutely be extended. But people have said in doing that, talking about being able to call up academy players, and look, you and I are calling college games all the time. You can't do that because of the NCAA rules, which are a completely separate organization. Now, that might change because they're in all kinds of flux right now in terms of roster limits and all kinds of things that are happening at the NCAA level. So there might be a situation where academy players could get MLS experience, not as a full professional, but then still be able to go to college. But right now you can't, and there's just nothing MLS can do to change that element right now. Maybe down the line, sure, but that's why in this situation, Wilfred Nancy couldn't call up an academy player, and there's no way to get around that with the current structure of college soccer in this country. And then they messed up in their other call-ups, and they ran out of them, and they didn't find a way around it. The rules need to change, but also you got to look at Columbus and say, hey, y'all knew what was coming, and you didn't handle it well enough.
It can be both things, right?
Yeah, it's both, I think.
But there needs to be looks into the league. And Sean Zawoski, shout out to him. If anyone wants to look at his Instagram page, it's pretty funny to see him say, at least I made a save. So from one fantastic player doing something very difficult to another fantastic player in terms of Lionel Messi, his status right now is up in the air as to whether he will return for the Miami home game against the Philadelphia Union this weekend. As we know, the Argentine star has been injured since Copa America, and he was back in training this weekend. However, he was not on the field during the 15-minute media viewing at training on Wednesday morning. Obviously, Inter Miami has done a very good job without Lionel Messi on the field, but they want to make sure they get their star back in action. Do you think he's going to be ready, or do you think they need to be precautious to make sure he's available as they get into the more important part of the season and, of course, playoffs?
Yeah, you got to be careful with Messi because he's the GOAT and he's still an absolutely incredible player. So you got to be careful. You want him in the playoffs more than you want him in, I don't know, a Wednesday midweek game in Atlanta next week. So if he wants to miss that trip and have pizza again, that's completely fine. But it's not like Miami has not been very good without him. So I think that makes it even easier to be careful. It's been, what, almost 2 months now since that ankle injury in the Copa America final. That was a pretty significant ankle injury. I don't know how many.
The close-up was gnarly, let's be honest. Yeah. When they zoomed in on that ankle, I thought I was going to vomit a little bit.
Yeah, I'm very squeamish when it comes to ankle injuries because my left ankle is basically silly putty at this point. I felt like
you got some trauma, Jason. You got some trauma.
Yeah. I mean, my left ankle, and I'm thinking back to when I really did damage to it because, you know, you'll hear something and people freaked out, I think, after it when they talked about it being a ligament injury. Every ankle sprain is a ligament injury. Like, that's what it is. But some are worse than others. I partially tore ligaments, which, again, is just a very bad sprain. I've chipped a bone in my ankle. I've rolled it very bad one way and then about a year later did it the other way.
Well, that's the issue with ankles, isn't it? Once you do it once, it has this level of bendability that it shouldn't, which makes you so prone, and only so much tape and braces and everything can do.
And that's a really good point because I think Messi has been really lucky in his career without having a whole lot of injuries and a whole lot of ankle injuries specifically. I don't really remember any major issues with him, but it does take time to rebuild the strength around the ankle. And for a player that is so good on the dribble and cuts and little steps and going back and forth and swerving through traffic, the ankle's very, very important. And 2 months for an ankle that blew up the way that his did. And look, somebody probably should have told him, and this is coming from somebody with a whole lot of ankle issues over the years, keep your sock on, keep everything on to prevent it from swelling up.
Yeah,
so bad.
It was great. I could not believe that they took it off. I was only, the only thing I can think about that is, maybe they thought they needed to check if it was cut, or did they think that was, because the rule is, it's the same with a goalkeeper glove. You don't take it off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it swells. So, like, it swelled more, and I don't know if that's affected the recovery or not, but that was crazy. You just got to be careful with him. You don't need him Saturday against Philadelphia. You don't need him Wednesday in Atlanta. You need him in the postseason. And he's the kind of player and the smart player as well that can handle coming back with less time and rhythm on the field and still be incredibly effective. So there was a lot of freaking out because, look, this is what the media does, right? And I saw a lot of different narratives about, oh, he's re-injured the ankle or there's a setback in the injury. No. A source told Michelle Kaufman at the Miami Herald that this was related to an illness. He had a sore throat. This has nothing to do with the ankle. So he is progressing the way that I would think that he would be, just judging from the intense swelling of the ankle on July 14th. He's probably about to where he should be, close to coming back, maybe even a little bit ahead of schedule, honestly. And we'll see if he gets back on the field. But Miami should absolutely not rush him. And if he wants to have his very strange pizza on Wednesday night rather than play at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I'm not going to be too upset about that. All right, let's get into the next one on the MLS six-pack. Colorado Rapids, a team that we've talked about a good bit here on the six-pack, and I don't know if everybody else is paying close enough attention to this team. They're fourth in the West. They're 4 points out of second. They're seventh overall in the MLS Supporters Shield race. They've quietly built a really good roster. They've had four fairly recent U.S. men's national team players in the group before they've added another one in Reggie Cannon. It's been a wild ride for Reggie Cannon. He went from Dallas to Boa Vista. I don't know if Boa Vista ever paid the transfer fee to Dallas. That was an issue at one point. There was also talk about them not paying his salary. There was a lawsuit. Somehow he lost the lawsuit and now has to pay Boa Vista £1.2 million, which is crazy because Boa Vista's broke. Then he went to QPR and they released him about a month ago, which made him eligible to be signed as a free agent by the Colorado Rapids. So he's there through 27. They brought in Zach Steffen. They brought in Georgi Mihailovic. They've got a really interesting roster, and Reggie Cannon makes them even better. Is this a team that we need to talk about as one to watch in the MLS Cup race?
You and I have talked about it, haven't we? What Chris Armas has done with this Colorado Rapids sides and how he's been a manager that's kind of been given a second chance. And it feels like he's doing that with his players too, right? He's giving these players an opportunity to come back to Major League Soccer and under his coaching and guidance thrive. Now, for Reggie Cannon, you mentioned a turbulent time and, you know, didn't work out in England with QPR, which is a really high pressure club that has big expectations, but doesn't really live up to them all the time. It can be a tough place to go. There's a little
bit. Be careful. QPR fans are going to get in your mentions yelling at you.
Oh, they can yell at me all they want. They have the fake hoops. Reading had the blue and white hoops first. So
I've already
made Rodney Marsh blush about this topic. So it's okay. I feel very comfortable with it. But I think what's good about the players you mentioned is it's solidifying the defense, because when you look at what's been their struggle, they're scoring goals for fun, 53 goals on the season. Defensively, when you look at that top four, that's where Real Salt Lake, LAFC and LA Galaxy all have something over them. They've conceded 45 goals, which is, you know, almost 10 more than all the other teams in and around them. So I think defensively, it's a great move to bring in a player that has experience. You mentioned Zach Steffen as well. And this is a side with the Colorado Rapids that, look, they're not going to win the Supporters Shield. They're probably not going to jump up that much higher than any of these other teams. But when it comes to playoff format and must-win games, I think they've got an X factor that maybe makes them somebody that could be a darker horse in the challenge for MLS Cup.
They are not a team I would want to see in the postseason at all in the West, because I think they're going to take on the personality that we've seen this season of their manager, Chris Armas, who is a guy who deserves his flowers. He deserves credit, and he has just not gotten it. And for whatever reason, he's not on the cool kids list when we talk about managers in this league, and he gets left out of that. He's done a great job with this team, with what Colorado's strategy has been as of late. going and getting guys who haven't fit in other places and bringing them in. It's kind of like the island of misfit toys with Colorado a little bit, but it's a strategy that has them in a good spot. And remember, not that long ago, a couple years ago under Robin Fraser, they had the best record in the regular season in the West. So they have had their moments of failure, no doubt. But this is a strategy, and we talk about roster strategies in MLS all the time. This is one that if they're not going to spend crazy money, it's one that can work. You get talented players with a chip on their shoulder and something to prove, which fits their manager, who has that as a manager and had that as a player as well. He was always the one guy just outside of the national team picture, great defensive midfielder in Major League Soccer. Every time he got an opportunity, the door opened for him with the national team. There's an injury. He would get in there and then he would get injured. He missed two World Cups that he would have been part of due to badly timed injuries. This is a guy who gets these kinds of players dealing with adversity, dealing with setbacks in their career. And I think he can speak to them in a very different way. So they're a perfect fit for Colorado. And this is a Colorado team that with Georgi Mihailovic pulling the strings and now an improved defense and a goalkeeper who can, on his day, win games for you on his own, that's a team I do not want to see in the postseason. And I think they're going to pull an upset of somebody big.
Colorado will play Portland this weekend. But Jason Longshore, I'm going to give you an opportunity for the next pack in our six pack to pick your game of the weekend that has your eyes opening. And well, don't pick my one, because I'm going with the obvious, if that helps.
Okay, well, we'll see about that. I will leave the Atlanta one out of it as well, although that's a huge game in the East. Nashville is kind of, I don't want to say down to their last chance, because it's still pretty tight in the Eastern Conference. But
it's pretty much the last chance, so let's be real here.
Pretty much, if they don't get a result here and other results go against them, yeah, it might just do it for them, but it's not a guarantee. That's a very critical game, because Atlanta wins, they're back into the playoff picture, and they're looking at potentially trying to put a run together to get into the seventh spot and avoid the play-in game. Right now, they are out of that. Before the weekend, last weekend, they were in that game, but going on the road. So you look at the schedule, Miami-Philadelphia is one that a lot of people are going to talk about. We did a little bit with Messi. Philadelphia is a team that is trying to play their way into this spot. They are 1 point behind Atlanta. Those teams are going to meet in Chester coming up here pretty soon, and that could be essentially a playoff game before the playoffs start. Cincinnati-Columbus is the one that's going to get the most attention, right? I mean, I don't feel like that's going out on a limb. Cincinnati in second, Columbus in third. Columbus 2 points back, but they have a game in hand. That's going to be a good test for both of those teams that are honestly pretty well established where they are. You know, you look at the table around them, Miami's 8 points ahead of Cincinnati. Unlikely you're going to see Cincinnati or Columbus get into the first place conversation. But then you look backwards and Columbus has a 6-point advantage on Red Bulls and they have two games in hand. Probably not going to fall back to fourth. So Cincinnati and Columbus are going to be second or third. They're not going to get these do or die kind of games down the stretch that can get you ready for the postseason, by the way, and can be really important in making a run. This might be that game for them. And if I'm Wilfred Nancy, who I think he loves to look for these kinds of message games, this might be it for the
it's
crew.
It's also about that game, isn't it? Because he's so too peed off about what happened against Seattle that now this is the game. And I wouldn't want to be Cincinnati coming into this game because it feels like they've got an axe to burn.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think if you're Pat Noonan or Wilfred Nancy and you look ahead at that schedule and you're like, man, we're kind of playing out the string here a little bit. And anybody out there listening, don't give me the nonsense about, oh, the regular season doesn't matter. These games don't matter. See, this is what I'm talking about. No. This is a different format. I know it's not what you might watch in other countries, but these games don't matter because they are underneath the supporter shield race, but they are comfortably in the playoffs. They're going to have games that matter coming up. You need games that matter to get ready for games that matter. the managers in this case have to make this game matter to their players and use it as a lesson, no matter what the result is, to get ready for the postseason. So that's one that I'm really looking at to see how it feels.
And it also feels like a game that could very well happen again in playoffs. So it's a great opportunity to learn. I'm going to go with El Tráfico, keep it nice and simple there over on the Western Coast with LAFC and LA Galaxy, because this year El Tráfico has meant so much more because of the standings and because of how competitive it was. With LA Galaxy right now sitting pretty, 4 points clear of LAFC, this one can be described as a six-pointer. So that's why I'm going with this one, Jason.
Yeah, I can't really argue that at all. You look at the Western Conference right now, and I think it's always good to kind of reset, especially for those of us on the eastern half of the country, to take a look at the West and see where it is. The Galaxy are 4 points up on LAFC at the top of the table. Salt Lake, 1 point behind LAFC. Colorado is 4 points back from LAFC. Seattle has been the team that has been the hardest to maybe get a feel for this year. They've had some really bad results. They've had some really good results. They're in fifth in the West. You might not feel that way when you see some of the conversation around Seattle, but they're in fifth, Vancouver sixth, Houston seventh, all separated by a point. Portland and Minnesota are the last teams in, with Dallas and Austin chasing them. This feels like a statement game. I think maybe more for, honestly, for both teams. I mean, LAFC wants to get to the top of the table. They got two games in hand on the Galaxy, so they can get there. The Galaxy are the best team in the West. Saw them recently with Atlanta United making the trip out there. They've added Marco Royce, which makes them even better. I don't know if they get respected as the best team in the West, though. I think everybody's still talking about LAFC. I think people are talking about the teams in the East. The Galaxy are the best team that is being talked about the least. And if they win El Tráfico, they better get their flowers because they'll deserve it.
Absolutely. So, final thing I'm going to talk to you about, Jason. You are the American, I'm the foreigner. Pochettino finally becoming reality. You know, the rumors were around, it was pretty much set in air, but we saw the official post, which means it's the real thing. How excited are you about that appointment? Is this the difference maker for the U.S. men's national team?
No, this is not the difference maker for the U.S. men's national team, because that's not what a national team manager is. And I think that needs to be understood in this conversation by U.S. men's national team soccer fans. I've given up on the hashtag USMNT. Don't go there, especially during a game. It's a very scary place. I'm talking about your average national team fans who love the sport in this country. There has to be a reasonable set of expectations for what success is with Maurizio Pochettino. He is a very good manager. I love the way that he feels about the game. I love his passion. I love what he has done with teams that he's managed. I mean, you're talking about a great run with Southampton. You're talking about a great run with Spurs. He won titles in France. He was amazing when he first started his career at Espanyol. A very charismatic guy, a very passionate guy. And it's the ideas that have grabbed my attention. I can't remember off the top of my head who wrote it, and I apologize for that. But the book that was behind the scenes of one of his first seasons at Tottenham that gave great access, a great read, and I think great insight into who he is as a person. So as a USMNT fan, I'm very happy that we have somebody like that representing the team and the country. So I'm really happy about the appointment. But that appointment doesn't make the roster better. That appointment doesn't change that in terms of talent, the U.S. men's national team is, dependent on the day, what, somewhere between 12th and 24th in the world. And, you know, you can't really quantify that, but they're not in the top tier group. And I think they're probably at the bottom of the second tier group or at the top of the third tier group, however you want to break it up. So BC, if we're going by school grades, that is what it is. And this is a player's game, especially when we're talking about national teams, because you're not able to really build schemes and build game models in as, you know, deep of a way to make up for a lack of talent in some positions. So you kind of are what you are. You want Pochettino to come in and make them play a lot more like the 12th best team in the world than the 24th. Lately, they've looked like the 24th. You want them to play above their heads. You want them to get some results that maybe on paper they shouldn't get. But you can't have the expectation that Pochettino makes more world-class players than this team currently has. I think England went through this for a long time, where there was a very outdated idea of how good the English national team was. And when they didn't meet that outdated idea, the manager got crushed for it. And many managers got crushed for it. It's not just Gareth Southgate. It was a bunch of them before. And that wasn't fair, because the national team is what it is based off the talent that you have at your disposal. And you're going to be, you should be judged by that. Your results are going to be defined by that. And no one should come into this thinking, because Pochettino has the experience that he does, that all of a sudden now the U.S. is among the best 5-6 teams.
Pep Guardiola is the best manager in the world. He's not winning Scotland a World Cup if he becomes their manager. Like, no. The manager can make a difference, and he can fulfill the potential of the players. He can even help them overachieve, but they're not going to overachieve by, you know, 10 spots just because a different manager comes in. I think it's exciting. It shows that it's an attractive position. It shows that the US can compete in terms of, you know, luring a manager to come be their coach. But it's not the same to compare Emma Hayes coming in and helping the US women's national team win an Olympic gold as it is saying that Poch is going to come in and all of a sudden the US are favorites for a World Cup.
No, this is a team with hosting a World Cup that, if the U.S. makes it into the quarterfinals of the 2026 World Cup and Pochettino leads them there, then that is an amazing accomplishment. And it should be celebrated. It should not be looked at as that's the bar. No, the bar is to get out of the first round. The bar is to win a knockout game, in my opinion. That, because look at the U.S. history in World Cups. That's what it is. And you can't all of a sudden expect that to change. I'm glad you mentioned the U.S. women, because people will make that comparison and it's not fair. I love that Emma Hayes was involved in helping get Pochettino here. That's great. And I love that she is so bought in to what's going on with soccer in this country that she would use her resources and her network to go to a manager that she worked alongside at Chelsea and say, hey, this is a good place to be. Come on, let's do this. That's great. And I'm really happy about that. That makes me feel a lot better about where things are with U.S. soccer. But look, like, he is a very good manager, but it's not fair to expect him to do what she did, because she had a team that was among the most talented in the world. And she got more out of that group than Vlatko Andonovski did. You know, look, she had Mallory Swanson healthy too, which kind of helps a little bit. But you can't expect him to make miracles happen. Right now, this team has one world-class player in Christian Pulisic. They have some players who need to play more at the club level, and they have some players who have potential to be better than they are. But that is what they are. A quarterfinal in 2026 would be an amazing accomplishment. I would have liked to have seen him brought in after 2026, when maybe he could have built longer. But he's here. So you have to support him, and you have to hope that he can get this group of players to play above their heads.
That wraps us up for MLS Six Pack for this week. Make sure you're downloading us wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey app also available. For Jessica Charman and Jason Longshore, we'll be back next week with more.